Another thing that is not real and is illusory is the magnetomotive force, namely current, magnetism, because it's an effect, it's not a cause. It's the result of the union of the electromotive force plus magnetic remanence, because if you had magnetic remanence all by itself, you'd have emptiness. You wouldn't have energy. It's like nothing's there. It's just information. But when that memory of magnetic polarization is united with the electromotive force, only then do we have what we call current or magnetism. And that's what we end up calling the magnetomotive force, but it's a charade. It's like the it's as if the electromotive force is a naked force that decides to put on clothes. And because of the clothing, we misrepresent it or misdiagnose it as being something other than what it is. It's still, you know, we say clothes make the man. No, clothes hides the man. Clothes disguises the man, and clothes present the man as being something other than what he is, which is naked. But because we put clothes on him, oh, he's somebody else now. In fact, there's a joke among nudists at nudist camps when somebody they're accustomed to seeing naked all the time puts on clothes. They say, oh, I didn't recognize you with your clothes on. Anyway, inside joke. So that's what the magnetomotive force is and the current that results from so-called magnetism. And that's why magnetism is not understood very well, because it's really an interaction of various elements and not an element in itself. It's not a singularity. It's not a single element all by itself. It's an interaction. And I always suspected that what we know, what we measure to be voltage resulting from the electromotive force, is the only force in the universe. I always suspected this, but I didn't know how to translate. Okay, so what's the magnetomotive force? What's magnetism? What's current? If I know that current is a fiction resulting from applied voltage producing reactant voltage, reactance voltage, divided by impedance over within a context of time, that sounds pretty complicated for what current amounts to. But what does it mean in terms of the forces? You know, and taking a more simplistic approach. You're not worrying about action and reaction, just thinking about, okay, what is it at its most fundamental point of view? And that would have to be the electromotive force interacting with magnetic remanence, creating a magnetic field, which dissipates quickly, gee, no doubt, because it's not a singular ingredient of electricity. It's not. It's the magnetic remanence of copper wire, let's say, with the electromotive force imposing itself or interacting with that magnetic remanence, which is not very extensive because it's copper. And so it dissipates rapidly. Copper doesn't retain magnetic memory very well. Iron, on the other hand, does. In fact, iron is the perfect medium for remembering the impression left behind when the electromotive force that created the magnetic field is removed. And what you're left with is a memory of what used to be. But that memory is the intelligence behind this masquerade of making magnetism look like it's something new and different, and it's not. So what is really magnetism? You know, Eric Dollard says electricity is made of two ingredients, the dielectric force, which I'm enumerating now as the electromotive force, plus magnetism and time. Okay, so we consider time as a context, not so much as an ingredient, because it's not something physical. So we get to remove it now and then only consider what is physical, well, even magnetism is not a singular ingredient within its own right either. It's totally dependent upon the electromotive force as the only dynamic force that comprises it. The magnetic memory is a byproduct of the materials of construction interacting within a context of time with the electromotive force, creating them, the magnetism, and leaving behind a footprint, so to speak, of orientation, of magnetic polarization, which in the case of copper dissipates, which in the case of aluminum is not even upheld. It's bounced right back out at you in reverse direction, as if, or not necessarily reverse orientation, that part I don't know about, but it's reflected right out of it, because it's not retained at all. So copper retains it somewhat, aluminum not at all, and iron completely. And that's the difference between the three as they respond to magnetism and the loss of power that created it. You know, once the power source is removed, what happens? So it's no small wonder that Oliver Heaviside came upon the solution that he came upon, because that's the only way to solve it from the viewpoint of, well, what is magnetism? Now, the way the utility grid solves it nowadays, by retarding the electromotive force so that the so-called magnetism can keep up, that's not really a solution. It's more like, how do you call it? Well, it's a detraction. You're literally taking away. That's why they have to do it. Of course. If they had done it Oliver Heaviside's way, we'd have over-unity in the grid. And that would be some animal to have to wrestle with. But by doing it the way they do it, by putting capacitors in line with the conductive path of the copper wire every 1,000 miles or 100 miles or whatever it is, and retarding the dielectric, or if you prefer, the dielectric force, or if you prefer, the electromotive force, they are actually reducing the capacity for electricity to manifest as over-unity. Because once you break even, the ability to go over into over-unity is, well, you're right there, you're at the borderline. But if you stay away from the borderline by retarding the dielectric field, you're not going to get over unity. It's not going to happen. And God forbid you should, because then it would become common knowledge that over unity is a basic principle of efficiency in the transmission of power, which is what the transatlantic telegraph cable problem solution was all about. Taking yourself to the brink of over-unity, but not going there, but taking yourself to the borderline, to the brink. Oh boy, I knew it. I knew it would be that way, and logic bears it out. Just logic alone bears it out, and that's what I rely on a lot, because we know so little about what we have experimented with so little. And so what little experimentation I've done on simulators alone, and maybe a few circuits, bionic circuits though, not powered by batteries, but powered by the earth and the body, trees, amounts to not a whole lot of experience, yet it's enough. It's enough to piece together the puzzles of this mystery that are kept from us. And I can see why they took out the permalloy cable, telegraph oceanic cable, and put in repeaters, because they don't want it to be obvious to anybody who would examine it and think about it, and think about it very carefully. So, there you go. It is a conspiracy to withhold the knowledge from us so that no one can get any hints. There are no hints. You have to use history to find the hints and to see how things have been changed and whatnot. You can't use current evidence. So it's no small wonder that everybody looks at everything face value as, oh, you know, the modern is the best and anything which came before it is not as good. And that's totally a lie because it's really upside down. It's the other way around. We've gotten an intentionally engineered 95%, let's say, efficiency rate of the transmission line in order to prevent us from understanding how electricity actually works and be able to come up with our own power source in our garage or in our kitchen, for that matter, or within every single appliance built in, for that matter. I mean, God forbid we should have or be. See, that would be sovereignty, wouldn't it? Insofar as power is electrical power is concerned, in all the manifestations, such as mechanical or thermionic, if that's the correct term. God forbid we should be sovereigns in our own right, capable of manifesting our own electrical power. God forbid. And so our society has to be engineered to ensure it never happens, and to make sure we're totally dependent on the trunk line of money. You got to go out and earn your money, and as if we are morally guilty if we don't. Let me tell you something. As a nude protester in L.A. for many years, decades, since adolescence, when I went into a meeting with a senior hearing officer in the Van Nuys courthouse district of the San Fernando Valley of Los Angeles, the first thing, or the only thing, that the senior hearing officer was interested in hearing from my lips was, I had a job. If I was a job, then everything would be fine and I could go home and he'd be fine with that. But no, I don't work. There's something wrong with me. I don't work for a living. And, well, as somebody on the internet I've recently read has put so aptly, we're kept within this model of so-called utopia in which everybody is kept so busy working 9 to 5 that they won't have time for anything else. They won't even bother most of the time. Most of the time, nobody will bother to be curious. There must be something more than this. No, there isn't. As my cousin so well put it when I gave him a DVD about chemtrails, he I don't want to know anything about it. I just want to do my job, come home, and take care of my wife and kids, and that's it. And he was a mechanic, an airplane mechanic at Travis Air Force Base, and the last thing he wanted to know about was chemtrails, No, I don't want to know. I want to remain ignorant, please, thank you very much, because I want to enjoy my life. Yeah, I have to admit, you've got to have a little something extra special to be able to handle the stress of knowledge, because really, at this point, knowledge is a burden. When you start to get into knowledge that the public is not allowed to have, for the most part, and if you want it, you have to get it yourself. But no one's going to believe you because there's so few of you who believe in this crap. Conspiracy, yada, yada, you know. They make a joke about Oliver Stone in one movie that, in the movie Dave, with Kevin Kline and Sigourney Weaver, that, have you seen recent pictures of the president and compared it to before the stroke? You can see a difference, yeah, because he's got a body double posing as the president. But, oh yeah, it's a conspiracy. It was interesting, that movie, they had that, because we know that Hitler had a gazillion doubles. We never know if he ever showed up. And I was busy telling everybody, my roommates, the few that were there, that, that's not Trump. That's somebody else. Trust me, that is not Trump. And I couldn't figure out what that meant until it finally dawns on me, a reminder that, oh no, that's a body double. Don't make so much out of it. It's not a conspiracy. It's just politics in today's world. It's how it's run and managed. Anyway, I can talk, on and on. I got to shut up at some point, and I think maybe now is the time to do it.